Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. He has been in the game for a long time, and he knows all the cars, but he loves German cars. But if you got a Japanese car, an American car, an English car, don't give us a call because the phones don't work. That's the thing about today's show. The phones don't work. So I want you to jot this email address down. It's voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be taking all of your questions via email today. Gordon Fricke, isn't this the strangest thing?
Well, you know, it's like we've got to rebuild an engine and the toolbox is not available.
Yes.
So we got to improvise. We're going to use chisels and vice grips and hammers and pliers and...
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, you'll catch me giving the phone number about 20 times in the show.
Well, that's burned into your brain.
Yeah. It's like after the fun drive, you give the fun drive number so many times, you'll be in normal conversation, you'll be at the grocery store.
It's the only number you know at that point.
Give me a pound of ham, 1-800-323-9262, that sort of thing. But we're not going to do any phones today because there are no phones. We've had some issues.
That's a rare event, isn't it, to have your phones down?
Yeah.
At a place like this?
It's a mite embarrassing.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, we already have an email or two, so here we go. This one's from Dave in Albany. Says, I have a 2001 Subaru Forester with two problems. One, had to replace the driver's side headlight unit with a brand new one, not from a junkyard, but brand new. Worked for a while, then I had to lift the hood and jiggle the plug that connects the headlamp. Eventually, the plug would no longer fit. I looked at it, and it was melted. Want to do that one first, and
Absolutely.
Then we'll go to number two?
Well, look at them all come in right
now. Wow, isn't this amazing?
Phones have become antique.
All right, so that's the first part. And then, okay, about the same time, the horn would work intermittently. Then one day, the car wouldn't start. No lights on the dash or anything. I opened the hood and jiggled one of the horns, and presto, it started. Now about every 50 starts, I have to repeat the procedure. Should I try to self-diagnose and fix or risk spending hundreds at a garage?
All right.
It's from Dave in Albany.
All right, so let's start with the headlight. That
yeah.
was the first issue, and he
mm-hmm.
replaced it with an aftermarket one.
Right.
Worked fine, and now the plug he found melted?
Yes.
It okay.
He jiggled it and had to do that for a while, and then eventually the plug wouldn't fit. It was melted.
Yeah, yeah. Here's what's probably happening with the headlight. I'm sure it's an aftermarket headlight, which would be a practical thing to do. To get a brand new original equipment light assembly would be quite expensive.
Right.
So you get a used one or you get an aftermarket one.
Yeah.
A lot of the aftermarket parts that we get aren't manufactured quite 100% correctly. Fit and finish is a problem and things like this. It's very possible that his connector wasn't making a great, perfect connection. And the headlights are running on full battery or operating voltage. If you have a lot of resistance in one of those connections, a bad connection, it'll generate heat.
Sure.
And that heat, it's just like your toaster. When you put your toast in and those coils in there get red hot, that's called resistance heating. Well, you don't want resistance heating happening outside of a toaster. So the plug gets too warm and it finally melts and it loses its connection.
Sure.
So what he's probably going to have to do, if the connector on the headlight is still intact and it just melted or ruined the one that plugs into from the car,
yeah.
he can get a repair harness at an auto parts store.
Just the
yeah,
plug?
Yeah, they'll get you the plug. They'll sell you the plug and a length of wire, and you splice them in. If they don't make one for that particular headlight, which would be rare, you'd have to go to a junkyard and cut one out.
Now, why could you not simply bypass the plug and solder your own length of wire, red to red, black to black?
You could if it's as simple as if it's only one bulb that's being affected. And I don't know. This was an 01 car.
Yeah, an 01 Subaru Forester.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe that's just one light bulb in there. So if a guy had to or was crafty enough, you could make your own little plugs or your own wire ends and plug them in one at a time. But I think that car, you can get a repair plug quite easily.
Okay, fair enough.
So I think that might help him out on the first item.
What about the horn working intermittently and then not at all and then no lights on the dash or anything? He opened the hood, jiggled one of the horns, and presto, it started.
Yeah, I think he's got a corrosion issue affecting the connections at the horn. And it's probably not related to the dashboard issue.
Well, remember, I know from corrosion issues. My second-to-last Cadillac had a terrible, I think it was a 99 DeVille. It had terrible corrosion issues in the box.
Yeah.
And eventually we just had to clean it all up and everything was fine.
Yeah, that's a big problem today with, cars are loaded with wiring electronics. They have fuse boxes all over the place now. I had an 01 Buick LeSabre a couple of weeks ago, had a power window issue, and there was a massive fuse box under the back seat, which handled a lot of the accessories to the car, the windows, things like that.
Yeah.
So you got an underhood fuse box, an under seat fuse box, and an under dash fuse box.
And maybe one in the trunk.
Very likely, not in this car, but a lot of cars have a big one in the trunk because there's so much stuff going on now. So corrosion affects everything.
Okay. All right. And here's one from Anonymous in Albany. I have a 2011 Mazda 2 with 31,000 miles on it that is almost paid off. Excuse me. If I plan to run it into the ground, realistically, how long can I plan on having it work problem-free? Just put new tires on it.
Yeah. Here's the key, and you'll hear this a lot from various sources, but preventive maintenance is the key to making your car last as long as it can with as little trouble as possible.
Yeah.
And the best reference is the owner's manual. And when you go to the owner's manual, our part of the country is considered severe use. Sounds really horrible, like you're putting the car through a meat grinder. But we have season changes, temperature swings, rain, snow, all the elements, salt in the winter, the whole deal. Short stop-and-go driving, idling. A lot of people warm the car up in the winter 20 minutes before they hop in. All that stuff. So follow the maintenance procedure under the most severe conditions. Do everything they say when they say to do it. And if you get oil change intervals that seem longer than you might think you're comfortable with, let's say they say change your oil every 8,000 miles or every 7,500 miles, for the long-term benefits of the engine, that's not good. Cut those in half.
Okay.
Do a lot of maintenance, and that car will last as long as possible.
It only has 31,000 miles, but it's already 4 years old.
Yeah. He's off to a good start, and that's a good, solid car.
Okay.
So I think he can get a lot of use out of that.
All right. Fair enough. I would say the number to call. Haven't done it. It's a Vox Pop, which is traditionally a call-in program. No phones today. We have some issues here at the station. I invite you to email your questions for Gordon Fricke, our automotive expert, at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Here's one from Deb in Knox. Deb has a 2015 Accord, 3 months old, 2,500 miles. How often should the synthetic oil be changed?
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go.
It's a phenomenal question because I have a representative that comes in periodically who works for one of the major engine remanufacturing companies in the country. They do engines, transmissions, differentials, all that stuff. And we speak about things like oil changes, when to do them, why intervals are set up the way they are, and why they're so spread out nowadays.
Yeah.
And that is not for the benefit of the engine or the car and the owner's long-term relationship with the car. A lot of those long oil change intervals have to do with reducing pollution, keeping the oil in the engine longer so less of it goes to the environment, keeping the oil filter in the car longer so it doesn't go in the garbage, but it's at the expense of the life of the engine. So going back to her question, what was the crux of it, Ray? Was there a mileage interval that she was concerned about?
It's synthetic oil, and how often should it be changed? It's a brand new Accord. It's 3 months old, 2,500 miles.
Yeah. If she drives it other than the most ideal commute, with full synthetic oil, a good commute, I think it would be not terribly unreasonable to do 5,000 miles between changes, maybe 4,000. The old rule of thumb used to be every 3,000 miles, conventional motor oil, this part of the country.
Yeah.
I recommend that interval to people who are super hard on their cars, even with synthetic oil.
Okay.
And a lot of the telltale is check the oil regularly, see how fast it turns black. And if it's really looking horrible at 3,000 or 4,000 miles, it's got a lot of stuff in it that needs to come out.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. We are doing a Vox Pop without phones today. And so far, everybody's stepping up with the emails, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back.
Support comes from Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires, culture, college, cows. DestinationWilliamstown.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. Old Castle Theater Company, downtown Bennington, Vermont, presenting The Lion in Winter by James Goldman, performances by Nigel Gore and Elizabeth Aspenleader, September 25th through October 11th, oldcastletheater.org. Colby Attorney Service, Corporate Formations, Document Retrieval Services, Court Filings, and Legal Publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyService.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Poughkeepsie Farm Project's 8th Annual Super Bowl, a celebration of local soups, music, in community on Sunday, October 4th. Farmproject.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. I'm not going to give you the number. So far, I haven't lost my discipline and giving you the phone number. Why would I not give you the phone number? Because the phones don't work. Of course, it's a call-in show without phones. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Yes, Vox Pop, where walk-ins are always welcome. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, is here. You have a car question as well.
I have a car question, but first I do want to say you can also check in on Facebook and Twitter.
Ooh, I
if
forgot.
If you have a question.
You said that with kind of a disapproving tone.
I gave you some serious side eye.
I'm a little rattled today. What do you want?
I keep staring at the window because I'm expecting messages to come up from the phone. So now I'm turned away from it. I'm not looking there anymore.
Our poor volunteer, Deb, is just waiting for the phones to ring that
She's
don't
so
work.
Hopeful. Yeah. Well, anyway, what's your question?
Anyway, my question is, I have a 2006 Honda Civic, and I've had this problem literally since day one of owning this car. It was bought new. The front fender is very low to the ground, and it's constantly hanging off.
You haven't fixed this yet.
I've tried to fix it, but it just keeps happening. It's a flaw in the car. So what do you think I should do about it?
So are you talking about the plastic shielding that goes under the front of the car?
Yes.
Yeah, most cars have that now, and it's a splash shield to keep junk and water and stuff off of the bottom of the engine. But these cars are so low to the ground that we see these constantly torn apart, ripped, half ripped off, dragging down the road. Is yours hanging lower than it should if you look at the car?
Yes, I mean a piece of it is hanging down.
Okay,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if it's broken and it's not under the car at the correct height, you may be forced to get a new one. Mm-hmm. And make sure that it's secured the correct way, up tight and as high as it normally can go. Short of that, there's really nothing you
can
do.
Take it off. Who needs it, right?
Yeah, but then you're exposing. It is a good thing to have because it does keep. The main thing it helps in the Northeast is it keeps the salt from splashing all over the bottom of the engine. And that gets up into all kinds of things that don't want corrosion and salt on them. So, yes, the car can drive without it.
But we did this in my day without these things. Well, you kids with your splash guards. Yeah, come on.
I also assumed you did a lot more walking uphill barefoot in the snow both ways than you did driving. So
you know what? The glory days of the 65 Le Mans, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we didn't have any of that. And you don't even need an engine. Come on. Corrosion, bah.
But thank you.
But I think I would try to get it fixed, secured, replaced, and then just watch the parking curbs where you're pulling. That's what kills them, because you scrape over lots of them and hit them. I see it a lot.
I've done it a lot right here in the WAMC parking lot.
Well, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, I hope you're satisfied.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. And once again, the email address here is voxpop@wamc.org. Got a phone-free edition of A Call-In Show. Go figure. This one's from Patty and Otis. By the way, Patty is a dedicated Mets fan, and so she has... I will read this exactly as written.
All right.
I won't ad-lib this because I have so much respect for Patty from Otis. Patty says, my niece has a Hyundai. She recently had a flat tire going through a bridge under construction zone. Luckily, it was in the middle of the day because when she called AAA, they realized that her car did not have a spare tire. Fortunately, they towed her to a local tire place and she bought a new tire and all was good. She called the dealership and they said, the car does not come stock with a spare. You have to buy a spare tire kit. This was just unbelievable to me. How can a car not come with a spare tire? What if this had happened at 2 a.m.? I have never in my life, in all of the cars that I have owned, had a car not come with a spare tire. How many cars do not come with spares? Why are they possibly doing this? Thank you, Patty from Otis.
Yeah, that's a very good question, because that is becoming more and more common. Now, what kind of car was that, Ray?
Just filed it.
Yeah.
Okay, it is a Hyundai.
I don't know if that car, and I think I've already answered my own question. That car does not come with run flat tires. There's a lot of cars that do not have spares, but they are equipped with run flat tires. BMW started it quite a long time ago. Mini Cooper and Corvette a long time ago. And in the case of the Corvette, it was a space issue. The car just didn't have, they just couldn't make the room for the spare tires. They're big, fat, giant tires.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you make a space saver spare, it's still a big, tall thing. So those cars originally became equipped with run flats. And the run flat tire is much stiffer of a sidewall. And it still takes the normal air pressure. But if the air goes out of the tire, it only goes down a little ways, and you can continue driving.
Yeah.
And at a reduced speed and a pre-described distance. I think it's 50 miles an hour, 50 miles. The downside to the run flats, they're a tad expensive. So cars like this Hyundai, if it doesn't come equipped with a spare tire, she called it a spare tire kit. So, you know, tire, jack, wrench, that
kind
of stuff.
Sure.
If she bought the car new, shame on the salesman, because shouldn't somebody be alerted to the fact that, oh, by the way, your car doesn't come with a spare?
Yeah.
And then they say, well, how much is a spare? And that spare kit's probably not cheap. And then I don't know if it still has its own well to put in, but... So, yes, there are cars equipped today without spare tires, lots of them.
Yeah. Now, you know, I suggested this before and you poo-pooed it. Couldn't you just make solid rubber tires?
Well, the run flats are as close to that as you can get because their sidewalls are so stiff that they'll support the car and drive on it. And that's really as close as you can get.
Yeah.
So you're not really totally off base with that question.
All right, here's one from Dave who says, why do dealers and mechanics overinflate the tires? After every oil change at various places, the tires were all inflated to 40 afterwards. When I drove my 2014 Mazda 3 off the lot, the tires were all inflated to 50 PSI instead of the proper 34. This led to a bumpy ride until I figured it out. What gives?
Yeah, that's too much air. I've always advocated going a couple of pounds over the plaque on your door.
Right.
So if it says 32, 34 is not going to harm anything. It's going to give you a slightly easier rolling resistance, slightly better tire wear, slightly better fuel economy. And I mean minutely.
Right.
But tires lose air as a normal function. They, you know, you can't contain gases forever, so it seeps out of the tire. So if you start them out at 32, what your door plaque says, 3 months from now you could be down to 29, you know, 28. So start them out at 34. Half that time you're a couple of pounds above it, and then the rest of the time, unless you check them regularly, now they're sneaking down. But
50's right out.
No, that's and there's a misconception with tires. If you look at the sidewall of any tire, it will tell you what the maximum load is at a certain air pressure.
Right.
The max load, max pressure. And that pressure could be 45, it could be 50. That only means if you're loading this vehicle to its limit, you can put in 50 pounds and the tire can handle it. But that doesn't mean drive at 50 pounds normally with normal loads.
Right.
So somebody read the side of the tire and said, oh, this tire takes 50, and they pumped it up to 50, and that was not correct.
That would be an indication that maybe you'd want to look elsewhere.
Yeah, that means that the person was not quite aware of where to look for the right pressure.
Gordon Fricke is our guest on a call-free edition of Vox Pop, and the emails keep rolling in. This one from Alice from Wonderland, USA. And I know Alice, and I know that she spends a lot of time in Wonderland. Is there any easy way to know when you need new tires? Not all of us are as car savvy as you, Gordon, but when someone in an auto shop tells Alice she needs new tires, he's looking at the tread. What can Alice do to confirm that she's not being played?
Yeah, very good question. There used to be an old backwoods test, and it had to do with a penny. Do you remember that at all, Ray?
Not at all.
Lincoln's head.
Oh, you mean in the tread?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you put a penny in the tread with Lincoln's head down, where his head, the difference between the top of the penny and his head was approximately 2/32 of an inch.
Uh-huh.
And that's the minimum tread depth that's allowable on tires by the DOT.
Right.
Now, you really shouldn't wear your tires down that low. But that's where they're saying it's illegal. No, I shouldn't say illegal, but that's the
minimum.
You
won't pass inspection.
Yeah, exactly. And all tires have tread wear indicators in the tread of the tire. And they are bars that become flush with the tread going across the tire. And when you see those bars that are across the tire, not along with the tread, but opposite the tread,
yeah,
you are close to the end. So, good question for her. And the other thing to keep in mind is as we approach winter, a tire is very ineffective below 4 or 5/32, which is just a hair under half worn out.
Yeah.
Because we got slush and snow to move out of the way.
Sure.
So if a mechanic recommends you get tires and it's November and they're down to 4/32, he's not trying to pull a fast one. He's recommending you get deeper rubber because we got winter coming on.
Right.
So that's the deal there.
All right, fair enough. This one comes in from Ashley, who says she has a 2008 Nissan Versa. How long past the estimated time miles can you go for an oil change? So how far beyond the recommended?
Well, you shouldn't go at all beyond the recommended, really.
Okay.
Because the recommended is too far to begin with. So I would recommend to Ashley, like I do to everybody, is take a look at the maintenance schedule that came with the car,
mm-hmm.
go to severe duty, and if even that sounds too crazy, ramp it down a little bit.
Okay, now she has actually three questions.
Okay.
The second one is a great one, and people ask this all the time. Is it okay to trust oil change places to do car repairs, flushes, etc.? Are the services they do worth it, or would it be better to go to a mechanic at a shop?
Well, I have to be careful who I
I'm not saying any
here.
Names.
No,
sir.
I know. The fast lube places that she's referring to are in the business to sell the stuff that they sell, obviously.
Services,
you know,
and whatnot.
So in addition to your oil change, they like to change the differential oil, the transmission oil, the coolant, and things like that. And as long as they're not overselling or overdoing it, that's acceptable. But a lot of times people don't have any idea when the differential oil was changed or when the...
Right.
So unless you're keeping records or going by the manual that came with the car, you could just quick glance say, oh, looks like I had all that stuff done just a month ago. Thanks, I'm all set.
Yeah.
So it's a fine line. Are they overselling or is it legit? Because those fluids in some cars do require changing. But you need to know what they are and what car requires and what doesn't.
Yep. And you know, some of those employees are really quite good. They're quite savvy. They're mechanics, a lot of them.
Yeah, and you can't bash them as to being all pure novices that are going to strip your drain plug and forget to tighten the filter and all that stuff,
yes,
you know?
Although I recall I had a car in 1987 that happened. All right, and then the final question, and this is a good one. The 2008 Nissan Versa, What would cause that car to not pick up or accelerate as fast as it used to?
It doesn't indicate the mileage or anything.
No.
There, does it, right?
No.
What, does it say the year of the car?
2008. Nissan Versa.
Yeah. What comes to my mind goes right along with the maintenance that we were speaking about.
Yep.
Let's say the air filter's 85% plugged. That's going to do it.
Fuel injectors, right?
Fuel injectors could be getting slightly gummed up where we need to put some Tecron additive in the tank.
Yeah.
Spark plugs still need changing, just at much greater intervals than they used to. So if I had to guess, I'd say it's maintenance more than anything on her car.
So just make sure you have these basic things
absolutely
up to date. All right, this one's from Andrew. What do you think of the 2009 plus VW TDI sports wagons?
They're a great car. They get phenomenal economy. I know some people that have those cars, and they're getting 50 plus miles per gallon. They're very clean. They're called clean diesels for a reason. So the soot and the smoke is extremely reduced. They're not very noisy anymore like diesel engines used to be in cars.
Do you need to keep them on at night in cold weather?
No, you don't have to plug them in. They start very well. Massive improvements in
really?
Diesel engines. And those improvements are primarily from Europe because they have dealt with high gas and oil prices basically since day one. So they've been fighting high fuel costs and finding every way possible to make a car more efficient.
So diesel is just less refined?
Yeah, diesel is a lesser refined fuel than gasoline. The diesel is very close to home heating oil that goes in your tank at home. So it's oilier, it's dirtier, it produces more soot and pollution.
Will an old diesel engine run on kerosene if you have to?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
The only problem is that the pure kerosene is not as oily enough, so you could run into lubrication issues with the diesel pump of those olden day engines. But it's very common to dilute diesel fuel with kerosene in the winter so it doesn't gel up.
Oh, okay. Well, this one's from Robert in Pittsfield, Mass. I have a 96 Ford Escort wagon that when I start it, it revs for about 5 to 10 minutes. I'll step on the brake, but it will continue, or if I take my foot off the brake, it'll start moving even if I'm going uphill without touching the gas. My stepfather told me once the gas tank is empty to put a gallon of premium gas in, let it run through, and then fill with regular, and that should do the trick. It did not. What else can I do? That's from Robert in Pittsfield.
Yeah, it sounds to me like there is a idle control issue with that engine. The idle speed control motor is overactive. It thinks it needs to rev higher than it really does. So that's going to require going in and getting it checked. And sometimes those things just need to be cleaned and serviced. It's called an idle speed control motor. The throttle plates need to be cleaned. I think it needs some maintenance items, and then it might need more stuff after that.
It's all computer now, right?
Oh, yeah, the idle speed. I had a guy call me a couple of weeks ago. He said, can I bring my car in and can you – I think he wanted the idle turned up. And I said, you know, those days are long gone.
Oh,
we can't turn anything up. It's totally under the control of the engine management computer.
That's too bad. I remember it. My old 65, my late lamented 65 Le Mans, driving it to school, and never between my house and the high school, there were days I didn't have to put my foot on the gas at all, just the brake.
Choke was on, high idle was on, and you just went for the ride.
It was a beautiful thing, man. Okay, this is from, let's do a short one here because the brake's coming up. This is a long question. Here's one from Robert who says, 92,000 miles, should the power steering be flushed and refilled? Thanks, Rob. It's a 06 Saab wagon, 92,000 miles.
I don't think that was ever an interval on Saabs because that car took a fluid made by a company called Pentosan.
Yeah.
And it is a synthetic power steering fluid. And I don't think there was a change interval on that. It certainly does not harm it by any means by changing it. The stuff's a touch expensive. You buy it by the liter, and I think it's about $28 to $30 a liter, and it's going to take several to flush the system out.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea because they do get some contaminants in there. So not unheard of to do. If he's not having any problems, I don't think it's, you know, critical that he does it.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, you won't believe this, man. But we have so many emailed questions. I have a stack
I'm
here.
I'm looking at it. I'm thinking the phones being down made no difference.
Some came in from Facebook. Anyway, we're going to hit the home stretch in a minute. And you and I will race through as many of these as we can go. We may not get them all in.
Didn't we think that this might be a show we had to improvise?
Well, we do that anyway. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back.
Support comes from the 2015 Saratoga Showcase of Homes, benefiting two charities, Rebuilding Together Saratoga and Habitat for Humanity. Three weekends beginning September 19th through October 4th, SaratogaShowcaseOfHomes.com for tickets. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting Surrounded, sampling Birchfield's wallpaper with original designs and watercolors by Charles Birchfield through September 20th. ArkellMuseum.org. United Way of the Greater Capital Region, inviting local businesses to sign up for a workplace campaign in support of the community. UnitedWayGCR.org/workplace. Bodhi Spa Yoga and Salon, Hudson. Daily yoga classes plus haircuts and color, massage, body treatments, and facials. Scheduling hair and makeup services for weddings. BodhiHolisticSpa.com. Mango Tree Imports, Saratoga Springs, New York. Participating in Saratoga Peace Week. Hosting an art exhibit by Gaza and Iraqi refugees on Tuesday, September 22nd from 7 to 9. MangoTreeImports.com. And Northshire Bookstore, hosting Nancy Marie Brown for her book Ivory Vikings, Saturday, September 19th in Manchester, Vermont. Northshire.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Well, an interesting experiment here today, Gordon, with no phones. We've had quite a show all the same.
It's been busier than some with phones.
I've done far too much reading.
Yeah, I noticed that. You got your reading glasses on the whole time.
For a man with a seventh grade reading level, and we're really pulling this off. All right, here we go. I have a 2004 Subaru Outback 3-liter engine with an air conditioning problem. I was losing the coolant charge in the system, and my mechanic added a die to determine the location of the leak. Apparently, it is a hose connection from the unit to the condenser. This replacement part is only available through Subaru at what I feel for the age of the car is cost prohibitive, approximately $266. My question to you, as well as my mechanic, is would a part from a junkyard get me a bit more life out of this part? My mechanic indicated it is a factory-sealed line that is apparently now leaking. But would a used part be a good gamble, considering the cost of the factory replacement part? That's from Patrick.
Yeah. It's not impossible to get a good used part like that from a salvage yard. And it sounds to me like it's maybe a section of line he's having a problem with. So if he finds one at a salvage yard and asks them to really inspect it carefully. You know, if the car was crashed, make sure that line didn't get screwed up.
Yeah.
And if it's a telltale sign if those lines are leaking is they'll get kind of oily because the refrigerant oil is traveling through the system all the time, mm-hmm. keeping the compressor lubricated and going through the whole system. So a nice rust-free or corrosion-free line that's not looks like it's oozing oil would definitely be an option to repair that car. So I would try it.
This one's from Paul. About 6 weeks ago, I lost the fob inside my car. We've looked everywhere except for the black hole behind the glove compartment. Honda dealer can't find it, and Honda expert tech people by phone did not have any answers either. It's very expensive to replace a fob, so I'm looking for a brilliant way to find it. It must be in the car because I can start the engine without having my spare fob nearby.
Uh-huh. It is in the car.
So what do you do?
Isn't there an app for Find My Fob? Or am I thinking of iPhones?
I don't know,
man. I'm just kidding. But, yeah, you've got that Find My Phone app. No, you don't have – there's not a Find My Fob app. It's too bad you couldn't initiate it to beep, but you can't. There's not a beeper in it.
Okay.
So how does he find it? I don't have any idea.
Does it give off RF? At all? Like, in other words
– I don't think it does because I think the transponder or whatever is in the vehicle looking for the signal is beaming a signal out to it. And okay. when it receives the signal in the right distance, it's satisfied and turns the car on. I don't know if the fob is also beaming out a signal.
Because if it is, you'd have to rent one, unless you wanted to spend a couple of $1,000s, but you get a spectrum analyzer and you sniff out the frequency, and if you turn the RF gain way down on this thing, so it's very insensitive, theoretically, you could find the direction that this fob
is
in.
Yes, you could.
It costs you $8,000.
What you're saying is definitely potentially possible, but is it practical to do? I don't know. Take the car and, get it detailed. The detail guy may take the seats and everything out and find it somewhere, or, you know.
That's a great question.
It's in there somewhere.
All right, this one is from Andrew, who says, how effective are the catalytic converter cleaners? I have a catalytic efficiency code on an 04 Acura TSX. I was told to try the cleaner and run premium in it, and the code should go away. Car runs well otherwise.
Yeah, that's a very good question because I'm familiar with those cleaners, and I have experienced them totally working, and I've experienced them totally not working. If there are deposits inside of the catalytic converter that, if cleaned up and removed, expose the catalyst again, and it starts cleaning the exhaust, the onboard computer will recognize that, and it will turn the light off saying the converter's good, it's working again. So the stuff is about $30 a bottle. Follow the directions on the bottle.
Yeah.
And one particular brand that I have experience with says to put it in the gas tank that is down to approximately the last fourth. And what they want you to do is pour it in on the quarter of a tank and first drive it about 10 miles. So you're getting a super concentrated cleanup.
Yeah.
And I have told people, drive it 20 miles and then fill it. It doesn't have to be filled with premium. We've talked about this many times about octanes and stuff, and the key is the amount of detergents in the gas, not the octane. If the car calls for 91, you need to put 91 in it, but put a good name brand, what they call a top tier gas that has max cleaners in it, and then fill the tank then, and then run that tank as close to empty as you can so you get the full dose.
Yeah.
Now, that check engine light may take days to go off by itself because the computer is constantly testing. So if he does this, tell him not to, or I'm telling him I'm on the air.
But, yeah.
Go another whole tank full or two afterwards, and then the light might go out after the next several tanks.
How long does it take for those to cycle through?
Well, it all depends on it depends on your driving style. You know, that catalytic converter monitor can sometimes take days to run. Or even if you don't drive the car in the correct manner, it could take a week or better.
Okay. This is from Rich, a 99 Ford Ranger. Sometimes the truck will not start unless I hold shift lever up into park. That's from Rich in Glenville.
Yeah, he's got a failing park neutral safety switch. And he's already kind of diagnosed that that's the problem by moving it further into park. What he can do then is, if it starts to fail even when he does that, he can try starting it in neutral, because it will start in neutral or park. And that switch almost always goes bad in park, because that's where the car is always placed when you shut it off. So have him try neutral, see what happens.
This is from Donnie in Garden City, Long Island, who wants to know, can I replace the clock spring on a new 2002 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited, or do I need to have it serviced? If it has to be done by a mechanic, what's the going rate for that? First of all, how do you get a new 2002 Jeep Cherokee?
New old stock?
Maybe.
Somebody saved it? No.
Anyway, so
maybe he means a new clock spring?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yes, the clock spring is the device that's between the horn pad and the airbag on the steering wheel. and it takes those electrical signals and transfers them down the column to the rest of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So you can turn the wheel and still use the horn, and your airbag gets its current if it's time to turn the airbag on.
Okay.
So anyway, that clock spring is a big wound up piece of wire, and that carries the current through there, and they do fail. And yes, they can be replaced without any special equipment. Battery needs to be disconnected for about 20 minutes before you start the job.
Why?
Just to let all the capacitors in that airbag system completely power down.
Okay.
So you don't get a mistaken activation, which
trigger
is
the airbag.
Very rare, okay. But it can happen.
Sure.
What I would do first, though, is he should call. Is that a Jeep Grand Cherokee, did you say? I know you put the paper away.
Yeah, I filed it.
That's
again,
right.
In the recycler.
Yeah.
It is a new 2002 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited.
Yeah. I don't know if Jeep had a recall, but there was a ton of Dodge Caravans and Voyagers and Town and Countries of that vintage that had a lot of bad clock springs, and Chrysler did recall those vehicles for that problem.
So check the recalls.
All he's got to do is call the Jeep dealer or call the Jeep Corporation's 800 number and just ask that question.
All right, so moving on. I'll tell you, we have so many questions. We will never get through these.
Look at the time. We've been nonstop.
We'll try. We'll try. This is from Ryan, who says, I have a 2000 Toyota Celica, 198,000 miles. There's an issue with his catalytic converter and burning oil fast. Should I get a new car or fix it?
Well,
new car.
You know, new car might be on the horizon, but I don't know if it's burning, if it's leaking, if it's an engine issue that's causing the oil consumption or a crank vent issue, you know, a PCV valve. But he's got some pretty big expenses looming. Might be the time to think about it. Car's been phenomenal. He's gotten almost 200,000
right.
miles out of
it's
it.
It's led a good life.
Yeah, so maybe now's the time.
Okay.
Like when MASH went off the air, they did it at the top.
Right. Well, that's debatable, but we'll have that show another time.
Oh, that's right. We're the car show.
That's right. All right. And they keep coming in, Gordon. I apologize in advance to everybody who doesn't get on the show. This is from Billiam, who says, I have a 2013 Nissan Leaf, 100% electric. Nissan just called and said I could buy it very reasonably. How long do you think the battery will last? That's from Billiam.
Well, I know the hybrid batteries were warrantied, I believe, 10 years, and I'm not sure if there was a mileage limitation. I would check with Nissan or the owner's manual to see how long they warranty those batteries in that vehicle for. Because definitely battery replacements
pricey. On
a full electric car would be lots of money.
All right, this one's anonymous from Twitter. My tire pressure light stays on even though all four tires are at 32 PSI. Can I ignore it?
You can. There's no an inspection law that says the car won't pass with the tire pressure warning light on. Could be a problem in the system, but definitely don't ignore the fact that you need to still check the tire pressures.
So it's a sensor that's gone bad?
Well, it could be. He doesn't indicate whether the light's flashing or not. But I always
flashing is always worse,
flashing
right?
Flashing means there's a problem with the system. A solid yellow low tire light means you've got it sensed a low tire.
Okay.
And on some cars, the spare tire, if it's a full spare, has a sensor in it, and that gets overlooked all the time.
Ah.
So if you have five sensors, check your spare.
All right, Gordon Fricke, our guest. This one from Facebook, Freddie on Facebook. What do you think of the old Triumph motorcycles?
Oh, they're fantastic. Great sound, big parallel twin engine.
Yeah.
They are what started the motorcycle craze. They came across the ocean to the U.S. before the Japanese bikes did. And the Triumphs were all four-stroke, big, solid. A lot of the Japanese bikes came over from Japan, and they're all screaming two strokes like chainsaws. So,
yeah.
Yeah, good, solid bike. They're not the old company that they used to be.
Okay. This is from Hartmouth and Great Barrington. Two questions, and we'll try to move fast. I have a 2000 Honda Insight. I just realized that my oil filler cap was missing for probably 1,800 miles. Now I feel it has lost power. Should I change the synthetic oil right away, and what kind of damage could that have caused?
Probably none, because if the engine ran out
of
oil,
if it didn't seize up.
Yeah, exactly. The oil light would have come on red, and you know, there would have been warnings and problems and symptoms.
Yeah.
If the oil was checked when the cap being off was discovered and it wasn't that low, it probably didn't harm anything other than make a little bit of a mess under the hood.
All right, the other question. The old Mercedes has an issue with cruise control failing. What are the components that usually go, and is it worthwhile or is it very expensive to fix?
How old is old?
Doesn't say.
Oh, boy. Well,
it's a 1937.
Yeah, yeah. The cruise control was your right foot back then. Though the early cruise control systems were primarily vacuum. So you always have to start with the basics and look for cracked or broken or vacuum hoses that have fallen off and start from there. Check all the there's a big a diaphragm that out opens and shuts the throttle. If the car is as old as I'm guessing it might be.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This, you know what I've decided? All of these emails that have come in that I will not get to, I will save these in a file for the next show that you and I do. And when there's a low point in phones, we'll go back and answer some of these that came in today. So next month, I'll save these, and we'll try to keep working through them.
We generally don't have any low points, but that's a
good point. Nice
thought, though, right?
We'll start the show with a couple.
Yeah.
We'll end the show with a couple, and we'll do it every time until the pile's gone.
That is a good idea, yes.
All right. By the way, what a success.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. No phone. Who needs a phone?
I just leave them unhooked.
All right, this one's from Ray. Hello. Whenever the temperature drops 15 to 20 degrees, my tire light comes on. We figured out that it's the same rear tire on the passenger side every time. Once we put a little air in it, the light goes off. We've gotten it checked out with our routine servicing, but they always tell us it's fine. I figure it all has to do with the weather and air pressure, and it's more a nuisance than anything else. Is there anything else we can do to fix this?
Yeah, there is definitely a very, very tiny leak in that one tire, because that one would not continue to go low enough to turn the light on, and the others are not. It needs to get sprayed down with a leak detection dye that has some soap in it, and it bubbles up.
Yeah.
In some cases, even that's hard to do, and you have to put the tire underwater. And that will find the leak. You have to look for bubbles. But he's got a tiny leak there somewhere.
All right, this is from Rob. Hello, love the show. Well, good. Thanks for emailing us, Rob. I have a 93 Ford 150 van. It only has 113,000 miles on it. It runs pretty well. I just recently noticed it drags while going up hills. Feels a little sluggish and loss of power at times. I want to get a little more time with it because I put a new transmission in it last year. What can I do to get the power back? And that's from Rob.
Is that a 350 van, did you say?
It's a 93 Ford 150.
E150, okay, yeah. Well, again, goes back to, at that age of the vehicle, what type of maintenance has the vehicle received? Is the air filter plugged? Are the spark plugs worn out to the point where the gap is a mile wide? Plugging catalytic converters still can be an issue, and they won't necessarily turn on a check engine light, but it'll choke the engine of power.
Mm.
But again, start with basics. Air filters, the easiest, spark plugs, that kind of stuff, tire pressure.
All right, this may be the last one we get to here on this program. This is from Kara. I have a 2007 Honda Civic. About 2 weeks ago, one of my daytime running lights stopped working. Shortly after that, the high beam stopped working. Any ideas on what is going on and about how much it would cost to repair? That's from Kara, and you have about 20 seconds.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just a bulb issue. And we get cars sometimes that come in with, they'll say, I don't have any high beams. And the customer will say, hey, it's not possible that both bulbs burned out. Well, one burned out one day, and then 3 days later, the next one burned out, and you didn't notice it, and it snuck up on you, and all of a sudden, now, bang, they're both out.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a bulb issue.
All right, well, we're done. Do you believe this?
This hour went by in 5 minutes.
Yep. We worked hard today, and thanks to everybody for emailing in. I'll save all these email messages we didn't get to. We'll try to burn through some of them next show. Support comes from Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe, Asia, Canada, and the U.S. since 1987 with a concert Sunday at 3 p.m. at the United Methodist Church, saratogachamberplayers.org. Rogers Book Barn, Hillsdale, New York, a bookstore on a country road with 30,000 used books and classical CDs, open 11 to 5 Thursday to Monday, rogersbookbarn.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. And Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce, offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill, upstatedivorcemediation.com. Thanks to Gordon Fricke. Thanks to everybody for listening and for emailing. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Thanks to Deb Malik for not taking your calls. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. We have a great treat in store, as always. Stay tuned now for news.